Welcome to Behind the Story, a program where we take you straight to the source. In this episode, we'll hear about how KWBU's Michael Incavo, a native of Ohio, came to understand the Lone Star State when he first moved here. In this episode, we'll hear Michael's original story, followed by an interview with McLennan Community College history professor Ashley Cruz Turner. This is Behind the Story.
Like any Yankee born in New York and raised north of the Mason-Dixon, my immediate and stereotypical impression of Texas is a cowboy, and by extension, the hats they wear. So who better to talk to about what makes Texas so Texas-y than a maker of that universal symbol?
Basically, this is the shop right here.
Yeah.
Stick this hat in there upside down, and then we'll press it.
That's Cameron Morris.
There, we'll take
He's the owner of Standard Hat Works here in Waco. On the day we talked, Morris showed me the hat-making process, from sizing to get a nice snug fit, to shaping, which gives a hat that iconic bend. For the 37-year-old hat maker, Texas is the only place for him.
The only way you're getting me out of Texas is in a pine box. I mean, I've been here my whole life, and I love it. Wouldn't live anywhere else.
Texans, Morris tells me, have their own character and attitudes, even their own form of punctuality.
People in Texas just kind of just a little bit slower. If we get there 5 minutes late, it's all right. You know, 10 minutes late, it's okay.
During my nearly 4 years in Texas, I've definitely come to understand there's a slower pace here. People talk more gradually, and time is based on Texas minutes. But before I moved to the Lone Star State, I definitely had some preconceived notions about what it was like.
Wide expanses and gunslinging, you know, longhorns.
A truck or two, cowboy boots every day, hats.
Very boastful, arrogant, loud, rowdy. Everybody rides a horse and wears a cowboy hat, chews tobacco.
Western movies.
Those are my friends, Sammy Starr, Mike Stanley, and Patrick Lenz. They all moved to Texas like I did. And like myself, they all had a certain understanding of Texas before they got here. While their preconceptions may seem a little harsh, they're not too far off, at least in some respects. While we like to think of modern Texas as more than one big ranch, the state's leading industry is still agriculture, and it leads the nation in cattle production. That adds up to roughly $10.5 billion annually in cattle alone. The United States Department of Agriculture even estimates that Texas has close to 12 million heads of cattle this year, the most of any state in the country. So maybe that's what's perpetuated the Texas cowboy folklore. With that many cattle, cowboys are just, well, they're just needed. But Texas and the people living here are much more than that. There's a unique identity to Texans. It seems, in part, to be a balancing act between unwavering state pride and overzealous braggadocio. And all of that's got me wondering.
What does it take to be a good Texan? You got to come to Texas, and you got to love Texas, and you got to say, I'm a Texan, right? That doesn't necessarily mean wearing a cowboy hat, and I don't mean you have to be an arrogant fool, but there is a certain, maybe even swagger to that.
That's Ashley Cruz Turner, a history professor at McLennan Community College. He adds that to be a good Texan, you also have to buy into some of the Texas attitude and mythology, which, of course, includes good old Southern hospitality.
Being a Texan, I think, is probably more of a state of mind than it is any set of actual distinctives in terms of physical appearance or anything like that.
Before I moved to Texas, I imagined the state as mostly white picket-fenced farmland, where your nearest neighbor is miles away and you ride into town in a beat-up F-150 on farm-to-market roads. But in actuality, nearly 43% of the state's population, that's roughly 11.8 million people, lives in urban metropolitan areas like Harris and Dallas counties. So in the same breath that Texas confirms some of those outside notions of what it's like to live here, it also denies them. What I've found in my time here is that Texas is like that oft-quoted passage from John Steinbeck's Travels with Charlie in Search of America, here voiced by my editor.
For all its enormous range of space, climate, and physical appearance, and for all the internal squabbles, contentions, and strivings, Texas has a tight cohesiveness, perhaps stronger than any other section of America. Rich, poor, panhandle, gulf, city, country, Texas is the obsession, the proper study, and the passionate possession of all Texans.
That larger-than-life, yet quaint sensibility, I think, is what keeps the mythos of Texas alive. It's passed on from generation to generation, enshrined through state-mandated Texas history courses and the Texas Pledge. It's threaded into the fabric of Texas and who Texans are. And although you don't necessarily need to wear a cowboy hat to be considered a Texan, that's certainly one way to do it.
And now we'll hear more from the conversation between KWBU's Michael Incavo and Ashley Cruz Turner. The two talk about Texas, how it's perceived, and how those notions are anchored in history.
So, did you grow up here in Texas?
So I actually grew up in Southern California. I was born in Houston and then came back to Texas as a college student and went back to California and then came back in my 30s, and I've been here since.
So we're kind of taking a look at the phrase, everything's bigger in Texas. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. So I saw a great poster one time. If you want to humble a Texan, remind them that if you split Alaska in half, Texas would be the third largest state. So I do think the immensity of Texas is very important to the personality. This idea, this outsized personality that is so typical of a Texan. This Christmas, I got a gift from my mom. This three times the size of a coffee cup that said everything's bigger in Texas. And so I think every Texan loves that idea. Bigger than life, everything's bigger. Bigger passions. Bigger ideas, bigger successes, bigger failures. And so whether that's true is probably a hard thing to say. That perception and that way of looking at ourselves, self-perception, I think it's very important to a Texan.
So how do you think we got to be this way? In Ohio, where I'm from, there's not nearly as much mythology and tradition. How do you think we got this way?
Yeah, so I think there's a distinct Texas nationalism. Back when Lone Star Beer was popular, they used to advertise themselves as the national beer of Texas. And so many companies want to be the national something of Texas in terms of marketing. I think that outline of the Alamo is one of the most popular images in the world. So Texans, right, we want to see ourselves as independent, right? The Lone Star Republic, this is distinct, right? That 9 years as an independent sovereign nation, Texans love that, very important to us. And so that's an element. The idea that Texas was carved out of the frontier and it took settlers and rangers, and there's this huge battle between frontiersmen and the Comanche, which, of course, in Texas, we have to believe the Comanche were the fiercest, strongest, bravest opponent that any person could ever face. And Texans, of course, defeated them. Yeah.
Could you weigh in on how Texas fit in to the places surrounding it?
Yeah, so, early 19th century, Texas is carved out of a frontier that obviously it was Mexican territory. It had been Spanish territory before that. Again, there was a fierce Native American tribe, several of them, but the Comanche most famously. And so Texan frontiersmen are trying to carve a European style white civilization in the midst of that frontier. So conflict all around, and then post-Texas Revolution, the threat of Mexico coming back, claiming what they said was rightfully there. So a reinvasion of Mexico was always a shadow hanging over early Texas. And then, of course, when that sort of gets settled, Texas isn't annexed by the United States, it's not too long after that, in addition to a war with Mexico that happens along the Texas border and connected to Texas, there's civil war, right, with Texas electing to secede from the United States and then obviously being part of the so-called Confederate States of America that loses the war and is reconquered by the Union. So, yeah, lots of conflict early on. And maybe you know, certainly that could contribute to the Texas fighting spirit.
Could you give us a bit of an overview of how Texas started out? You mentioned your studies were focused on the whole United States. Could you give us a view of the progression of Texas and like how it started and where did it go?
We talk about the Six Flags over Texas, which of course is, so at one point a Spanish colony, at one point a Mexican colony, right? During the Texas Revolution, we would have been considered the Mexican state of Texas. And then of course, after the Texas Revolution, there is the Lone Star Republic. The Lone Star, so under our own flag, a sovereign nation, and then of course annexation, voluntary annexation, by mutual agreement, become one of the states in the United States of America, and then of course the secession in 1861, where Texas attempts to secede from the United States, becomes part of the Confederate States, and then of course back to the United States. So it's been pretty smooth since 1865.
So you said you enjoy Texas mythology like any Texan. What sticks out to you? What do you think of when you think of Texas mythology?
Yeah, so again, the independence of Texas, right? Texans think of themselves as independent, and they, remember the Alamo, right? The Texas Revolution. As an American, I think everybody's connected to the spirit of 76. And part of the greatness of the American Revolution, the War for Independence, is that these 13 colonies were able to outlast, you know, what could have been arguably the most powerful military entity in the world, this great revolution, War for Independence against Great Britain. So there's a lot of pride and optimism that comes out of that genesis. And so I think Texans would fully embrace their Americanness, right? That even though Texas wasn't around in 1776, they're very happy with the spirit of 1776. But there's this, in addition to that, there's the spirit of the Texas Revolution. It is interesting to me that in later years, one of the most popular flags you will see, not only the Lone Star flag, but the Come and Take It flag, right, which flew at points during the Texas Revolution, and certainly represents a stubbornness, a willingness to fight for what you think is right. And so, you know, there's something that's very, very Texan about that. Again, we're really talking about our own self-perception, right? We could clearly have some people come in and say, right, you guys are completely deluded. But when we're talking about Texas mythology and the way we perceive ourselves, there's certainly that, right? The come and take it. Come and take it. We still see the come and take it flag. I saw a come and take it flag the other day on the back of a bumper sticker on the back of a pickup truck with an AR-15, right? So a completely different meaning. And so Texas, independent, frontier, willing to fight for freedom. That's certainly part of the Texas mythology. And then, of course, there's also, you know, in the 20th century, when we talk about American capitalism, we have, you know, we've started thinking about that as this independent struggle. We've often analogized it with the frontiersmen. And so I think certainly when you start talking about Texas moving into the 20th century and becoming an oil-rich state and the wildcatter mythology within Texas, these guys, again, who are pushing off into this economic frontier and being stronger and smarter and tougher and winning in the end, you know, that becomes, you know, late 20th century. J.R. Ewing in Dallas, probably not many people reading, listening, even remember that show. But, you know, that's the kind of thing we would expect from a Texan. Getting back to that, everything's bigger in Texas, right? We're going to hit our oil well, and we're gonna build the biggest hotel. The movie from the middle of the 20th century based on the Edna Ferber book, Giant, right? That this is so big, right? We're going to do everything bigger.
Do you see yourself as more Texan or more American?
It's a great question. Dual nationalities, maybe, right? Sometimes when I'm trying to explain the Civil War to a class, How would somebody feel like they were, right? How would they have a loyalty to Georgia or Virginia and the United States? And it, quite frankly, it's easier to explain to a Texan. I think Texans are 100% loyal to the United States of America. But there's a sense that you can be an American, but you're also a Texan, and those are two very distinct but also important two important ideas. So, I mean, of course, I'm an American, but I'm also very proud to call myself a Texan.
What do you think is the difference between calling yourself Texan or American? Does it suggest certain imagery? Do you think there are different types of people in each category?
Yeah. I think it's significant that if you're in Europe and you're at a bar in Paris and you tell somebody you're from Ohio, I'm guessing doesn't make an impact. If you tell somebody you're from Texas, everybody in the place, right, they want to know about your horse and whether you carry a gun and all of these things. So there is something distinct. And again, I think because that distinct culture has been, 150 years in the making. And so I think Texans, even naturalized Texans, right? The native Texan versus the naturalized Texan. I was born here, or I got here as fast as I could. That idea. Only in Texas. That's another only in Texas sort of idea. And so I think every Texan somehow, some way, in maybe a mystical way, carries this sense that there's something different there. And when Texans call themselves Texans, and I think every Texan almost just about feels his Texan-ness, but I don't think that diminishes anything about their American-ness. I don't think these are mutually exclusive at all. I think it's different. Again, I can't think of another state that has this sort of Texas pride, or at least that idea of Texas nationality. I mean, California is a very distinct place, and New York is a distinct place, and there are lots of the Sunshine State, right? I mean, there are lots of states that feel different. But again, that sort of dual citizenship. But I say that metaphorically. If anybody were to suggest a Texas secession or something like that, that's usually, again, those are exaggerated ideas. That's not an idea that I think floats around in the political community. I don't think that has a lot of credence for most people. When they're talking about Texas nationalism, they're really not talking about seceding and another Lone Star Republic.
Do you think of Texas as more Southern or Western?
So I had one great professor at Baylor who said that the dividing line of the South and the West happens to be Interstate 45, right? So East Texas feels very Southern. It feels very much like the Cotton Belt South, and it's green and it's lush, and there really were lots of cotton plantations all through there along the Brazos River corridor, right? There's lots of traditions of the Cotton Kingdom, lots of vestiges of that play a big role in our history between the end of the Civil War and modern times. So that is very Southern. It's a very Southern part of Texas. And of course, as you start moving west, it doesn't take a genius to figure out the difference between Jacksonville and Odessa, right? These are very different places. And so the West, West Texas is very much a part of the West. And then I suppose the North, you have a real plains feel as well. And then we talk about of course, there's the Gulf Coast. But I think that East-West divide is a significant divide that, again, goes back to a lot of the antebellum traditions, a lot of the post-Civil War problems, right? You certainly, East Texas would feel different from West Texas. If you divide, if your definition of the South, and for many people it is, you can't get away from the fact that Texas was a Confederate state, right? It's one of the 11 states of the Confederacy. So it's certainly Southern in that degree. Southwestern is almost another distinction. Of course, there are other states we'd call Southwest, like, you know, New Mexico and Arizona and perhaps even California. But that's almost a distinction that Texans seem to have invented, right? The Southwest, this Southwest flair, right? I mean, when we think about Southwest, we probably think about the Texas cowboy. And when we see a New Mexico cowboy or an Arizona cowboy, we still think that's a Texas cowboy, right? So that Southwestern idea certainly, I think, is connected to our image of the Texas cattleman.
So probably the last thing I'm wondering about is, when I first moved here, one of the biggest things that struck me was the variety of people. I checked with a number of other people who hadn't given Texas much thought and later moved here, and they reported assumptions similar to mine, like, oh, you know, I expected lots of horses. And it's so surprising to me, the size of these cities and the number of people here. Do you encounter that variety as well? Do you think Texas is home to, like, lots of different types of people?
Sure. I think I would say Texas is a very cosmopolitan place, at least in a lot of the, at least in the cities, for sure. And it's true that, right, Texas has always been a magnet for immigrants, right? American immigrants into the Mexican state of Texas in the 1820s and 30s. Again, right, German communities and Southern European communities of all stripes dotted out, you know, throughout the state. So Texas is, again, sort of that bigness, right, that open space. That's been a magnet for a lot of different people who've come. And so that was certainly true of the 19th century, but the 20th century as well. Lots of immigrants coming into the cities and bringing in culture. And so I think demographically, we're quite diverse. And, you know, for these people who are trying to figure out where Texas is going to go, red or blue, politically over the next couple decades, they will note that Texas demographically looks very much like California. So again, diverse demography in Texas, and again, maybe that certainly accelerated over the last few decades, in which America has become much more diverse. But I think that tradition of people coming to Texas and sharing with Texas something distinct from their culture, but also adopting the Texas culture, I think Texas at this point may actually be better at assimilating immigrants and making them Texans, may even be better than the United States is at assimilating immigrants and making them American.
Do you think someone can be uniquely, fully, authentically Texan without necessarily fitting all of the stereotypes that people expect from Texas?
Yeah, so I think, so I think the stereotypes are actually disconnected from the reality. We were laughing about your typical Parisian assuming that a Texan is going to wear cowboy boots and ride a horse and have a hat. And of course, you know, Texan, being a Texan, I think, is probably more of a state of mind than it is any set of actual, distinctives in terms of physical appearance or anything like that.
What do you think it means to be Texan?
In some ways, I think some of the Texan distinctiveness is America in microcosm, right? We've talked about the United States. Immigrants coming to the United States, what's it take to be an American? Well, some people would say what it really takes is to buy into the American project, to proclaim yourself an American. And so, again, Texas in microcosm. What does it take to be a good Texan? You got to come to Texas, and you got to love Texas, and you got to say, I'm a Texan, right? And that doesn't necessarily mean wearing a cowboy hat, but there is a certain maybe even swagger to that. And I don't mean you have to be an arrogant fool. It does – I think you have to – to be a good Texan, I think you have to buy into at least some of the Texas mythology, which is based in history, but it's also it's as much attitude as it is narrative. Rooted in a sense of history, I think it's rooted in the Alamo, and it's rooted in the miracle of San Jacinto, and it's rooted in the oil success of the 20th century. So all of it's rooted in history, but yeah, a lot of it is, again, sort of this self-perception. It's buying not only into the into the history, but also buying into the narrative.
That was Ashley Cruz Turner, a history professor at McLennan Community College, in conversation with KWBU's Michael Incavo. To hear this episode and past episodes of Behind the Story, you can visit our website at kwbu.org.